Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Silas in studio. Brody's back remote. You're in Dallas right now, right?
Yes, currently.
You're headed to Jacksonville.
Not sure. Are you not even aware? We weren't even aware.
I have no idea what's going on.
There's a tropical storm, potential hurricane coming.
Oh.
Yeah, so like the weather, we were supposed to leave. The plan, we just got back from a wedding. We were in a down in Mexico for a wedding. We just got back late last night. The plan was for us to leave first thing this morning, like at 4 o'clock in the morning, to start making the drive because we wanted to bring all the corgis and all that stuff with us. And I just was like, let me just see what's going on. And I looked at the weather. So right now, today it's like ridiculously windy. So like 20 to 30 mile per hour. So you're not going to get good practice today.
Jeez.
Tomorrow, you're looking at 20 to 30 miles per hour rain all day. Thursday, you're looking at 25 to 35 mile per hour winds, 2 inches of rain on Thursday. Friday, you're looking for 20 mile an hour winds with rain the entire day. So, and then Saturday and Sunday actually looks like really good weather. But I'm at a little bit of a crossroads. I don't know what the right play is here. I'm not really quite sure. Obviously, the drive is out. Kelsey's like, we're not driving over there just to sit inside all day, because the whole point was to like hang out with my mom, go to the beach, do all those kind of things. She's out. The corgis are out. But now the question is like, clearly I don't want to fly there now or tomorrow to just sit and not do anything. So the question is like, do I dark horse just get on a flight Thursday night? But then I don't even know if we're going to play Friday. I don't know. Everything's up in the air. They did send out an email this morning. That was the first correspondence the Pro Tour sent out, saying like, we are aware of the tropical storm. We're monitoring it. They hired a new team, or like an additional team, I guess, to help with picking up stuff and getting the course ready, because obviously when you got high winds rolling through, and also this is just kind of all speculative, like the speculation or the guessing, I guess, if you will, of like what the path is going to be. And you guys are going to get hit soon too.
Oh, are we?
I think you guys are going to get crushed next week.
I haven't even seen.
Yeah, I think next week. Well, I mean, I don't think you'll get obviously the winds, but it looks like it's just going to go straight up the East Coast. So.
Straight up the coast.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I know we're getting some rain Friday, but that's all I've seen.
Oh, maybe not even that bad. Maybe it might go too far east. Might miss you guys completely. Looks like Lynchburg's fine, so never mind. I'm not a meteorologist.
There we go.
I'm not a meteorologist.
All right, we're going to get into some off-season questions and stuff as we prep for the off-season. But first, quick word from a sponsor of today's episode, Flippy Disc Golf. They just dropped these sweet new hoodies for the fall and winter season. Get you ready for whatever crazy weather may or may not come your way. You can wear them to brave that morning round or cozy up by the fireplace and watch the latest foundation video with your family. Flippy hoodies are stylish and comfortable in the perfect balance between activewear and loungewear. So check out the new collection on their website, and don't forget to use code FOUNDATION10 for 10% off. So thanks again to Flippy for sponsoring today's episode. So let's talk some offseason. You're in it, maybe be pulled out of it this weekend. Who knows? But what's on the docket for you this offseason? What's kind of the like generic plan? Are you just kind of parking it in Dallas, grinding it out there? Or like, I guess post Jacksonville, if you end up there, what's the plan?
I know we have the offseason's kind of flooded with trips as far as like during the season, I can't really do much. Right. So the offseason is kind of slammed with all the stuff that we've put off for these few months where I don't have obligations to go play these tournaments. So I know we have a couple things planned between now and January. We might be going out to Scottsdale a little bit more. We might be going out to Vegas a little bit more, which isn't the worst weather in the off season. So that's not bad. Dallas is kind of hit or miss. Like right now, Dallas is incredible weather. So I don't know what's going on. But right now it's great. So I have no drive, I guess, to like go somewhere else right now to practice. Cause as soon as this is done, I'm going to go out and get a couple rounds in. So right now we're Gucci, but obviously that can turn for the worst real quick and get real cold. And then at that point, probably look to go to Florida for a couple weeks, maybe when it's really, really bad. But other than that, just kind of the big thing for me this offseason, obviously there's a few things that I need to really work on. And we talked about that a little bit when I was going over my goals a couple podcasts ago. But for me, this offseason is really just about getting back into shape. I feel like going into last year, I was just getting into decent shape, probably like end of February, maybe beginning of March, and then just fell off the face of the planet all throughout the season. And so now I'm in pretty, pretty bad shape. I just obviously finished a workout this morning, and a lot of stuff I do, through Peloton, you can kind of see, well, how did I do last time I did a workout or whatever. And it's a pretty big gap right now. So the scale's not good. There's a lot of things not great right now with the body. So it's all about just trying to get as good as possible leading into Vegas, and then really hammering down and focusing on maintaining, if not growing, kind of continuing throughout the beginning of the season.
Yeah, so you went over the your goals and everything on the Trevor Staub show. So if listeners haven't heard that episode, be sure to go check it out.
Oh, that was on Trevor's. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but to kind of give a quick summary, like, what is the skill things you're focusing on your game going into next season that you think, like, this is what's, I don't want to say holding you back, but like keeping you from that top level where you want to be?
So circle one putting was something that I really started focusing on again at the end of the season. It was probably my Achilles heel for most of 2021 or 2022 rather. I felt like obviously you're going to have some tournaments where you just don't throw that well, but putting should be something that should be fairly consistent from tournament to tournament. And I just was not able to capitalize on the tournaments that I was throwing really well. And towards the end of the season, you can kind of see the results start getting a little bit better. And a lot of that largely had to do with just me being able to throw the disc in the basket. So really start focusing on that this offseason, so I have a great foundation going into it. And then obviously that's something that, again, it's one of those. So I think next season is going to be a lot better for me because I still played so many tournaments for the first time last year. So I was so focused on getting as many reps and playing as much as I can the courses. And some of my practice habits kind of fell to the wayside for that. And I think going into next year, that's something that I'm going to be working on is, hey, I don't need to play five rounds at a course. I can play one, two, maybe even three if I really need it a little bit extra. But two rounds, I should be pretty much good to go and know what I need to do. And that will open up time for me to get back to putting and stuff. So circle one putting, huge. Circle two putting is going to be more about just making better attempts from 60, 50 feet. Like in that 60 to 50 feet right now, I feel like I'm kind of just tossing the disc up. And if it goes in, great. If not, I'm not shocked. Where I want to get to the point of where I'm stepping up to it thinking I have a legitimate chance of making it. So I need to be cashing in those. I think some numbers came out. And again, U-Disc, you can take it for what you will. Because a lot of these stats, one, are kind of fraudulent in the sense that we have volunteers that are doing the statistics, and a lot of times they're not in the best position. And the last thing we really want as players is a volunteer coming up to you after you make a putt being like, was that 33 feet or was that 35 feet, right? Like, so granted, they're just in a really, I'm not bashing the volunteers by any means, but they're just in a tough spot to really give good statistics for what we're trying to calculate at the end of the season. But you can look and see like the best putters on that list. I think you had like Marweed, Paul, Eagle, Gannon. They're cashing in putts from that circle two distance pretty consistently. I think in the high 30s percent, almost 40% for some of them. So it's getting better at that. Continue to increase the forehand. The forehand was, man, I don't know if we want to talk about the Halloween Classic. Did we even talk about the Halloween Classic, or was that?
When did we haven't talked about it yet, no.
Did we? Oh, we didn't have a podcast episode last week. Yeah, we didn't have a podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone. We definitely need to talk about that because Trevor, what happened? Like, what happened when he came back?
We haven't even heard from, I mean, we talked to him, but he came back at a point where we didn't have him on Grip Locked that Monday.
Okay.
So we haven't actually really heard on podcast any of his experience out there.
Well, I'll leave it then. I want to hear it firsthand.
We'll have to bring it back up.
I want to hear it firsthand from him then.
Well, on the Heiser Club mailbag, Connor and I put like a we wagered what we expected Trevor to where we expected him to end up, and we both just mutually agreed 25th was where we expected. So he beat our expectations of himself. But we were close.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'll let you guys know I think the best analogy when it comes to courses, because this is I would say this is the big difference between disc golf and golf, is there are some courses in golf on the PGA Tour that for a professional golfer is easier than other courses, right? Like we can all agree the level of difficulty changes from course to course. However, you, for example, if you played any PGA Tour event course from the tips and in the setup, so like you're playing it, let's say you're playing it on Sunday. So the next day is literally Monday, the practice rounds, they're going to be out there. Sunday's the final day that they open it up for casual play. Or rather, let's just say you go to a pro-am. That's even better. So you're playing on Wednesday. The pro-ams are Wednesday. The tournament starts on Thursday. So you're literally playing it tournament conditions. The greens are running as fast as they are. The rough is as high as it is. All those things. You're playing it from 7,400 yards. You're not going to have that big of a difference between course to course on the PGA Tour.
No.
You're going to think every hole is – you're going to think every course is hard. Now, granted, there might be some courses that you're like, that course is impossible. But – every course is going to be very, very hard. Disc golf, it's very different, I would say, in like these local tournaments especially, because I always compared it, and you've probably heard this analogy, I've always compared it to like mini golf, right? Of where you can have someone like me and you, for example, if we go and play 18 holes at any course on a normal golf course, I would probably bet on myself to beat you. But if we go to mini golf, and if you haven't watched the Electric Foundation Nation mini golf battle, you guys need to go over, subscribe to Foundation Nation on YouTube, watch the latest mini golf battle. It was a roller coaster of emotions. but basically Hunter was spanking the living daylights out of me through the first like five or six holes. Like you were just crushing me. So I always compare it to this, but my cousin, who actually caddies for me at Vegas, Grody, he was at the tournament as well. We had like 20 people at the tournament, by the way. And I think you probably need to be there next year. I'm just going to throw that out there.
That's what Trevor was saying. He was saying we need to all go next year.
You might need to go. He had the best analogy, I think, ever. He basically was saying, and this is what this course was. It was a course like if you went bowling and you played with bumpers. The guy that's good at bowling, that's going to throw it down the middle and pick up some strikes and get some spares, but never throw any gutter balls, he's gonna still bowl his 185. But the guy that's just shanking it off and is just doing dink, 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 dink down the lane and then his strikes, like that gap gets way tighter when you play someone bowling with bumpers. And I'll give Trevor the credit in the sense that this course was one of those courses. It was a course with bumpers, to where there were some holes that were very, very difficult to birdie. But if you did attempt to go for the birdie, it brought bogey into play. But if you just stepped up to the tee and you're like, I have no chance of birding this hole, I'm just going to play for par, it was nearly impossible to get bogey. So you had a lot of people just playing for par. I mean, there was a lot of holes where people were just chucking forehand rollers and they're just going wherever and being in bounds. So I'll give Trevor the credit in the sense that I don't think this tournament, because when you look at ratings and stuff and you're like, oh, Trevor probably should finish in the cash. This was a tournament where like, I think there was someone that was like 9-16 rated or something that shot like 12 or 13 under. It was a wacky tournament. Next year, I've been told, if you are interested in coming, I've been told it's going to be designed by someone else next year, and they are going to make it more difficult, because that initially was my draw to this tournament, was like this random B tier in Vegas was ridiculously difficult in the sense they just had littered it with OB all over the place, and it was really fun to play. This year, the course layout was probably the worst out of the last 3 years I've played, but
there's also a C tier this year.
It did fall to a C tier. That is true. But it was so much fun because, I mean, I went out every morning with Kelsey, watched her play, who only putted scoobers.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
She made the decision, I think, the day or two before we left when we were putting outside. She started practicing, and she made the decision, like, I'm exclusively putting scoobers. And it worked actually pretty well for her. One of the girls in our group ended up winning FA3, which is, I guess, now women's three. Is that – or women's – yeah, women's three is the new terminology.
Women's amateur three, yeah. FA3 is still correct. It's just not women's rec anymore. They got rid of the word rec, intermediate, advance.
Okay. And keep an eye on Kurt Gibson. Keep an eye on Kurt Gibson. He was my like partner in crime in Ultimate Frisbee. If he catches the bug and like goes all in on disc golf, by keep an eye on him, I mean like he might start winning some local B tier events at next year.
Okay.
He was literally MA4 last year. Won MA4 and then went to MA1 this year, and we were all like, bro, what the heck are you doing? That's like, why are you doing that? Because everyone else was still MA3, MA2, and I think he took second or third. So big improvements for him. Obviously, there is like everyone that knows in disc golf, like that first year of you actually practicing, there's just a massive skill jump that you can make. It's to get to the next jump and jump and jump. That's where it gets a little trickier. But okay, enough with Halloween Classic. I'll let Trevor explain that more. But yes, I feel like Foundation needs to have a little bit more of a presence next year. Maybe even a Foundation versus a Nation in Vegas could be incredible. We could throw some money on the lines, or some, like, you know, have some chips from like one of the casinos, you know, $500 chips from one of the casinos, and the winning team gets to throw it all in black or something. So
Heck yeah. I was hoping Trevor's going to cash, cause I wanted to hear the story. But didn't happen.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. Oh well. Now another thing with this offseason that I've seen some different people like speculate with on YouTube, if you will, your contract's up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're headed in. We've seen people trying to guess, you know, staying with Discraft, leaving Discraft. Is there anything you can tell us? Any, or are we just gonna have to wait?
Yeah, it's a waiting game as of right now.
Okay.
I don't think there's really anything I can say.
All right. Yeah. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we get into a few more topics we've got planned for the show and take a moment to thank another one of our sponsors, I'm super excited to partner with today's sponsor, Aura. Aura is an easy-to-use app that includes everything you need to stay safe online. They protect you from scammers, hackers, by scanning the so-called dark web where criminals can sell stolen information, looking for your emails, passwords, social security numbers, and it alerts you fast if it finds any of those things on the dark web. They help you fight back against those annoying websites that make your personal information public by automatically requesting the removal of your info. This also helps reduce robocalls, which everyone hates those. Aura gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries, like if someone was opening a loan or credit card in your name. My wife's credit card was recently stolen, and unfortunately, her account isn't set up with Aura, because that definitely would have helped us out there. Their VPN also allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and personal information safe and encrypted. They protect your devices from virus, malware, spyware, and more, so the bad guys can't break in. And they even help you manage what your kids do on their devices so you can restrict specific apps, set screen time limits, and even set focus times to ensure your child is doing their homework instead of being on YouTube. If my parents would have had that, they would not have been too happy with what they saw during my high school days. But anyways, you'll be stoked at how much you'll be shocked and not stoked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over the 2 weeks that you have with a free trial by going over to aura.com/foundationdiscgolf to start your free trial. And you can also find that link down below in the description. That's aura.com/foundationdiscgolf. So let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. Sign up right now and get a free 2-week trial with our link in the description. Thanks again to Aura. All right, so wraparound event. We were just talking about New World at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
You missed out on Lake Marshall. Possibly playing New World, it sounds, if it happens. Sounds like if it happens. Now that we're in the midst of them, though, because Lake Marshall already happened, New World's about to happen, what do you think of the 2023 season kind of already being underway? Does it feel like a little more normal? Still feel kind of weird? What are some feelings on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's... It's one of those where like I don't really have a normal disc golf schedule yet, because my first year I ended up getting Lyme disease that knocked me out.
Yeah.
My second year I got COVID, and COVID mixed with Lyme disease was terrible. So that knocked me out. So this was like my first like full tour experience, I would say. And I haven't really had like a full off season yet of like feeling like what that time frame is, because the last two seasons my off season started a lot earlier than I was expecting. And yeah. I actually just ran into a buddy who plays on the PGA Tour, because they were just playing an event down in Mexico. So we were in the airport at the same time. And I mean, he was telling me he's got, I think, two or three more weeks, he said, that he was going to do back to back to back. And then he'll be done until like the beginning of February or end of January, something like that. So like their season is like, they almost really have a wraparound season, in the sense of like they have no off season. Is disc golf going to get to that? I think if the pro tour had a bigger staff of where they were set up, where there was like, all right, crew A is going to be working from March through this month, and then crew B is going to come on and work these 4 months, and then crew C is going to work these four. Like, they could potentially do a full year. But right now, I mean, everyone that's working on the pro tours, like, I feel like is full time all year. So they have to have some sort of time to where they can just like, all right, we need some time off here, because they're just traveling. So
yeah,
I think eventually it'll probably get to the point of where we're just playing the, or at least there's events. And obviously I sent out the season for next year. And I mean, that thing is,
it's like from June to September, there's no break.
That thing is May.
End of May?
Hold on.
Or beginning of May.
So you have,
we talked about it on Grip Locked.
Yeah, you have, oh my gosh, where am I? Why is it doing that? I don't like that. Dude, technology sometimes makes no sense to me. Why is it not? Okay. Well, if you can still see me, I can't see you, but you've got May 12th through the 14th is OTB, and it goes all the way through September 14th through the 17th. So you got May, June, July, August, September. You have 5 months essentially. Well,
and then for FPO, they go straight to US Women's and then straight to USDGC. We'll throw pink for them, right?
There's two off weeks in between MVP and USDGC, so I think they'll have an off week somewhere.
They'll have one of those. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
still, it's a wild, wild stretch there.
But the and obviously there will be some crazies that play every single event, but there are 11 Silver Series events that count. 11 Silver Series events, but only three count. And during that stretch, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. So essentially what they're doing, and I think this is a good idea, essentially what they're doing is they're making it to where you don't feel like you have to go and play every single event. Now, the big events, you kind of do, because the big events, there's 13 elite events, two elite plus events, and, those eight of those count, where both of the elite plus events count. So in that situation with elite events, it's like I could see some of the top guys saying like, I'm going to skip out on this one, I'm going to skip out on that one. But they clearly want all the top players to go to the elite events, and the silver events are definitely set up more towards people that either need more points or people that are like doing the full tour where they're just out in the road. And it's like, well, what else would they be doing going from this city to this city? Might as well stop in and play. So, I mean, my travel will probably be very similar to this year, where I think, you know, that Texas swing, I'll be driving. That middle portion of like the country, I'll be driving. But like West Coast, I'll fly out there. And then Northeast, I'll fly out there. So there'll be some events that I probably won't go to, because that's just too many events, man.
How are you going to decide? Are you going to wait till like the middle of the season, or like before the season? Are you going to see like, oh, do I, like, what points do I need? Or are you just going to go ahead and make the decision before the season starts? Like,
yeah,
this and this event I'm not going
to
do.
It'll probably be very similar to how I did last year, where I'm planning on obviously doing all the majors, doing all the elite events, and then it would pretty much just be the silver. Obviously, I was thinking of doing New World, so I thought that was going to be one right away. But there's a couple, like the beginning of the season, like Texas States, that's in Houston. I'll probably do that one. Blue Ridge is right in between Music City and Champions. So that on the way from Tennessee to Georgia, that makes sense to stop in North Carolina and do that one. And then the same thing with like the West Coast, right? I'll fly out to OTB, and then in between OTB and Portland, you've got Beaver State and the new one, Cascade Challenge, which going back to one of your guys' older grip locks, you guys said that there need to be cooler names. You got the Cascade Challenge. That's pretty fire.
The other silver series they added, or silver events they added, were all the opens. They added like three opens and then a challenge.
Yeah, I like the challenge.
We still need a shootout. We need some type of shootout.
Yeah, I thought that could have been the Texas State shootout.
Yeah, the TSS.
That makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I'll probably obviously front load beginning of season. It's pretty much what everyone else kind of does, regardless of whether the schedule works or not, is you kind of front load the beginning of the season with silver events. And then towards the end, you can kind of get a idea of where you're at. I think with me towards the end, obviously I moved all the way up to 27th with some good finishes there in the playoffs. But it was one of those where like the Pittsburgh tournament, looking at that, if I didn't get like the top five or something, and even if I did get top five, the points I would have got for that wouldn't have been that astronomical with where I was in the points list. But now with the points being way more for silver events, that could have a factor, right? Like now they moved it up to where there's a possible 150 points on the table, where last year I think there was only a possible 75.
Yeah, I think they doubled it because it was 25%. Now it's 50%.
Now it's 50%. Right? Yeah. So
it's basically twice the points on the table.
You might end up seeing, I don't know. I think that's cool though. I think that's how it should be. I don't think we should have, you know, I don't think we should be doing like an NBA season where you're going to see everyone playing at every single game. I think it should be something like this where the majority of the top players are not going to play at every event. They're going to pick the events they like and the events that are going to probably, honestly, that's the other thing too. If you want top players, go to your event. We just saw happen not a couple of weeks ago where a brand new event out of nowhere, not much information about it, got a lot of top players because of the payout, right? And we're talking about the Big Money Skins match. That's something that I've said from the very standpoint, going all the way back to VPO, Veteran Park Open. Is that what it is? Yeah, Veteran Park Open, which used to be, I think, on tour at some point way back when. I was talking to the tournament directors a couple years ago. I think the first year I was actually in disc golf, and they were just asking me questions being like, you know, how do we get better players to show up? How do we get like more top players to come to our event? I said it then, I say it again, money. Like if you just have a random B tier event and you're trying to figure out how to get people to come to your event. I mean, look at Battle for Bedford, for example, right? Like the payouts for those events are normally pretty good. You're going to get a decent amount of people coming in from out of town to play the event. Money is the biggest decider. And so I think with how the schedule is set up, I like it to where now the tour is almost telling these events and telling these tournaments like, hey, if you want your event to be higher, get better, or have more people or have more crowds or whatever, and you need better players to show up, you got to bring in the money. You got to bring in the sponsors. You got to get people to want to come out there. So we'll see what happens. I like it. I think it's a good thing.
I think it'll be interesting to see as the sport shifts that way, like what disc golf, how disc golf responds to it, just because it's not typical what we've seen before. Because like in years past, a tour, like the national tour, just didn't have such a full schedule to where like, of course, the top players played all of them. Because there wasn't really a choice. Like there's only X, like let's just say there's 10 national tour events. That might be completely incorrect number, but there's a small enough amount that you could justify playing all of them. And then players would throw in random A tiers here and there. But like now with the tour going this way, I think I like it too. I think it makes sense because I think it gives like it also I think will help set certain events aside and gives majors that extra feel just by nature.
Yes. Yes.
To where like that's where like the Elite Plus events and majors, they're gonna feel more important because there's a full field.
Yes.
Whereas like right now, what's the difference when there's a full field?
Did you just join the internet, babe? Can you join the other one? Hold on 1 second. Which Wi Fi did you? Which Wi Fi? No, I'm on Dark Horse. It just got really bad. I don't know what just happened. Okay, maybe it's weird. I'm on Dark Horse.
Who knows?
Okay. People watching, hopefully you didn't see that, or people listening, hopefully you didn't see that. But yes, what you just said, I'll add on to that. I think that is the direction the Pro Tour is going. Is eventually, and we kind of talked about this a little bit. Eventually, I do think these Elite Plus events will kind of drop their name, and those will just be the events on tour, and there'll be 4-round events, and they'll have cuts, and there'll be like 20 of them throughout the season, and only 13 count, right? So now you're getting to the point of where if you're a player, you're probably going to pick and choose. And also let's just go hypothetical and say like money isn't an issue for the top players, which right now, yeah, in my opinion, it still is. I mean, we just saw, you know, Chris Dickerson for the first time in forever decide to play on the West Coast, right? Like, and he was a top five player deciding not to play on the West Coast because of money. So we're slowly getting to the point of where maybe the top 10, maybe the top 15, maybe the top 20, money is no longer an issue as far as whether or not you're going to travel to a tournament. So let's say we get there hypothetically in a couple years, you are now going to have people that pick and choose tournaments that suit their game more and say, I'm going to play these 13 events and I'm going to skip out on these 7 events or whatever it may be. And what you just said is exactly right. If you want to see all the best players playing for what is coveted as the most important tournament, the most important win on tour, you're only going to see that at majors. Where right now, you go to the Las Vegas Challenge in February, everyone's going to be there. Everyone's going to be there. And I think that gets more spread out. And I'm sure some people are going to be like, well, that's not going to be good for like the locals. It will still be fine. Like, you have a couple people here and there not show up. It's not going to kill the tournament. But I think it does, like you said, it does elevate those majors to what we were like. Sometimes we wonder, like, why is it really a major? What makes it really a major? And when you take out the qualification purposes of like getting them, like Champions Cup or USDGC is doing, where you have to actually somehow qualify to get in and not just sign up. Outside of that, you're seeing the same people play week in, week out. So this will make those majors feel a little bit more special coming up to it, especially when it comes, I think, to maybe some of the European guys too, right? Like, we saw that kind of have a huge impact on the tour this year. They played a lot of events, probably more than maybe some people thought, but I could totally see some more Europeans coming over for the majors, which would be very exciting.
No, for sure. Yeah, I definitely think it's something where there's several things kind of going on right now. So many that I think I'll probably can't remember all of them, but like the Pro Tour we've talked about, they take very methodical, thought out steps in certain directions, and they move in strategically slow ways, like the tour card, for instance. Like, they had the tour pass that existed. They changed the name to the tour card. Realistically, you would only think there's one reason to do that, but you can see like slow progressions. You can see them building out the silver events. So you can see them create these Elite Plus. You can see the playoffs come into where I think these are just things where what we've talked about on the podcast, whether it's here, Grip Locked, you know, any of our shows, we've talked about the future of the sport several times. We've talked about different things laying out. And I think that we see the sport semi shifting that direction. The Pro Tour just is being very careful and cautious as they do it to make sure it doesn't rip the Band-Aid off and then everyone in the sport freaks out. I think this is just another one of those things where it might also be they're testing the waters a little bit too, to see like, what do fans and players think of this style of tournament? Like, if we get to an Elite Plus event and then like the fans and players all push back for some reason, then maybe it's like, oh well, thank goodness we didn't go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and do what you just said of like, that is the whole tour. Thank goodness we tested it out with a few of these events and stuff like that before we went and just full sent it full scented on it. So I think it's a pretty exciting time to be in disc golf because we're seeing things kind of slowly shift and change. And one of the things that I was talking about on Grip Lock that I'm very curious to get your opinion on. Sorry, my dog is getting all tangled up. The current sponsorship model of like the top, like we'll call it the elite team, but it's called something else on every company has this team. They get like their tour series discs, all of that. Then you have the next step down where there's some players with guaranteed, some players not. And then there's like another step down where it's just like more affiliate model, almost sponsorship. It's kind of like there's different, you know, intricacies in every company, but every company kind of has those three in some facet. Do you think that model makes sense long-term with like how competitive the field's getting to where you have someone like an Isaac Robinson who just won Rookie of the Year? We'll talk about him in a second. You have someone like an Isaac Robinson who's now pushing to that like elite team status because of how good he's getting and how good he is. But, you know, you also have players who are more established on tour, like a Kevin Jones, if we're sticking with him, Prodigy. And it's like, it's going to be hard to keep everyone that fits that elite status on that top team if we keep the current tier system. Do you think that it's something that like the sponsorship model currently isn't going to exist in a few years? Or do you think that like every company's going to have like 35 tour series discs? Or what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things that I kind of foresaw when I first got into disc golf of how it maybe made sense when disc golf only had a couple big names, right? And again, like when you're only showcasing, flashback to like 2015, for example, right? They're not showcasing 10, 15, 16 different people in a tournament.
Yeah.
You know, because at that point too, like Jomez was way bigger. Obviously Central Coast was around, and but like GK Pro is a little bit bigger now. But still, when you go and look at views with between Gatekeeper, Jomez, Jomez is still way bigger as far as like getting the views. So back then, like you would have what? You'd have Paul and Ricky on every card, and then you'd just have two people that would cycle in. So the amount of people that you actually, if you're a fan, the amount of people that you could actually get exposed to wasn't that big. I think also we've seen over the last couple years a huge, huge growth in players putting themselves out there on social media. You know, basically saying, you know what, like I don't necessarily need to make lead card for people to know who I am. And I also making lead card also, sure, great for exposure, but also doesn't do a great job of like showcasing who you are as a person and really having someone connect to you on that level and want to root for you. So yeah, this was something that I saw, like how does this continue to grow, right? Because we saw massive contracts being signed last year. You know, you got the Kona deal, you got the Ricky deal. I think Simon re-signed last year. No numbers, but probably signed for a decent amount. Kevin Jones signed. You got James Conrad moving to MVP. Kristen Tatar was a big sign for Latitude. So you have all these big contracts happening. And the question is, like, the sport isn't getting smaller. It's getting bigger in the sense of like the pros, right? Like this year alone, the amount of people that could have won a tournament or won multiple tournaments was probably higher than we would have ever have guessed years and years ago, right? So I don't see that going away. Like
No, it should get more competitive every year.
This
upcoming year should be even like more players in contention to win week in and week out.
Yeah, I just played two local tournaments, right? And some people know the name Randon Lotta, because he did play well, I believe, at Worlds it might have been, or D-Glo.
He had a few decent tournaments.
Or no, Ledgestone. It might have been Ledgestone that I think he really jumped
on.
Yeah, he played
good at Ledgestone.
And he had the cool hat and all that stuff. But he's not like a massive name. And then in the Halloween Classic, I played with a couple people I've never even heard of before. And I was like, this person has like really good throws. Like if they continue on, who knows how good they can be. We're seeing more and more players at younger ages practicing, you know, honing in on their skills. And then also now with the influx of money coming into it, where you could You know, do we know how many people made like $40,000 on tour? Is that something that we can look up real quick? Silas, can you look up those numbers? Is that easy to do?
I don't think that's it. Oh, like.
Yeah, like no, you can earnings. Yeah.
Go to PDGA.com, Silas, and you can go through player. It's on like player statistics, the tab, I think.
Yeah.
You can pull that up.
Do that, Silas, to see, because if you're a college kid, right, and you just graduated from college, or let's say college isn't really for you right now, and you're like a junior in college thinking about like, do I want to still do my senior year or whatnot? Like, it's not crazy for you to buy a van, live in a van, travel around the country, and break even.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah,
so
he's got the list pulled up. Sort it go. I think everyone's on the first page that made 40. You were looking for 40 or more?
Yeah, let's see. Let's say 40. 40 is a decent number.
It looks like Aaron Gossage was the cutoff at 41. And he's 17 people.
17 people. Okay.
That's FPO and MPO, because I think there's
that's not a lot.
3 or 4 FPO moved in. Yeah.
Definitely thought it was gonna be way higher than that.
I think there's
but
more at the go to page 2, Silas.
Is there more like 30? Is like the 30,000 like going to be massively bigger?
Cash again. Let's go to page 2. Let's see. Nah, not that much bigger. There's only 2 people. Yeah. I mean, page 2 ends at 23,000.
Yeah.
And that's Ezra Aderhold.
Okay. So definitely not as much as I thought. Yeah. But with
more than previous years, but
more than previous years with more money going into it, though, it's like we'll see. But with the fact of it, like you actually have a decent potential of maybe going on tour, and I don't know what the break even actual number is. I know Andrew Fish made a huge article that I kind of remember somewhat reading a while ago of where you like went through all the finances of how much it costs and all that stuff.
Yeah, it ain't cheap.
It's not cheap, but I think it's more. It's getting more and more viable, and I think that's going to be the big kind of icebreaker for some people, like to just, you know, let's say, hey, you know what, I'm just going to give it a go and try. But yeah, we aren't. I mean, the golf tournament. I knew my buddy Cash because I saw he was playing well, and when we left, I just was like, I want to know how much he made. I guess. So like me and Kelsey like sat down and started eating. I just like pulled up the tournament. And this is just some tournament in Mexico on the PGA Tour. It's not like a big event or anything by any means. And it didn't have all the big names there. It had some good players, obviously, but not like it wasn't a massive field. And he was second. So he wasn't last cash. There was a couple guys that tied for last cash. He was second to last cash with a couple other people. And I think he made like $53,000.
Yeah. There's a lot
of
money.
So we're still not anywhere near there. But like you said, we're getting closer and closer to like being more viable for someone saying, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to buy a van. I'm going to go on tour and see what I can do. But yes, to go full circle and answer your question, I mean, let's pull up, since we're talking about, let's just pull up Discraft. Because they have probably one of the better teams, I would say, as far as like depth goes. So let's pull up them. And obviously some movements and stuff can happen, but let's just assume 5 years from now, all these people are still with Discraft. And I'm gonna throw out some guesses as like maybe some people have gotten a little bit better, and so they have a Tour Series disc as well. So this is how many people would have a Tour Series disc. Silas, keep track of this number so I don't forget. Okay, ready? Paige Pierce, Paul McBeth, Chris Dickerson, Missy Gannon, Alexis Montejano, Ezra Aderhold, Adam Hammes, Ben Callaway, Chandler Fry, Paul Uelberry, and then we're going to go Aaron Gossage. We're going to go Austin Turner. We're going to go myself. We're going to go Corey Ellis. We're going to go Dan Schlitter. We're going to go Evan Scott. We're going to go, let me see if that's maybe it for just the people. We're going to go Micah Groth. And we'll go Scott Withers. We're going to go Terry Roethlisberger. Okay, that's it. What was that number? Oh, Zach Arlinghouse. Add one more. Zach Arlinghouse.
Okay, 20. 20 even.
20.
So that's just people that are currently on the team right now, as far as whether they're on the touring team or the elite team. Now, obviously, some of those names, that's just my predictions of, like, I think, like, Zach Arlinghouse, he could be very good in 5 years. I would not be surprised if he wasn't on a level of where some of the elite guys are right now. And that's also not including any of the European guys coming over, because I don't think right now Discraft sponsors any European people, any European players. And that's also to say no one else good shows up in the next 5 years. So,
yeah.
Because, like, do any of those people fall off in the next five? Maybe one or two. But most of those people I just named are all going to be probably playing in 5 years, right? So that's just the question of, like, how does it work? How does it work long term? Like, are you going to have?
What do you think? Like, what do you think is the next step? Like, because, like, the options are, you let everyone pick their Tour Series disc, and then you have yourself, Adam Hammes, and Corey Ellis all on the zone, and it's just, y'all all have a Tour Series zone in which everyone sells, or you go route, I don't even know the other route. I mean, the other route is, like, there aren't Tour Series discs, and people have kind of their own websites, like we've seen with, like, you, Paige, Paul, where, like, in Chris Dickerson, where y'all just, like, everyone just has custom stamp stuff on their website, and it's just, like,
I mean, this is,
or you just go the route of, like, Tour Series discs don't exist, and every once in a while there's, like, a limited edition collaboration, but
yeah, I think
just paid to throw the plastic.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a question that the manufacturers are going to have to figure out, because, you know, we are actually seeing a lot of new manufacturers come out, right? Like,
yeah,
there are more people coming to the table, and so then that opens up the, you know, because right now a lot of the top manufacturers all kind of have their eggs in a basket, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be hard, like Latitude, for example, it'd be very hard for Latitude, in my opinion, to have a huge signing with another FPO player, because it seems like they've thrown a lot of their eggs in the Kristen Tatar basket, which is a very good, I mean, it's probably a golden plated basket to throw them in. So they made a really good decision there, but, like, they can't, how are they going to sign, you know, how would they sign a Paige Pierce? Let's just say someone that's going to require a big contract. It'd be tough for them to do that. But if you have some other manufacturers coming that say, hey, we have no players, we have no one to throw our disc, like, we're willing to throw a crap ton of money at someone to, like, get our name out there, that could possibly happen. The other thing, though, is, like, at what point, and this is where I think the manufacturers have to make a decision, like, is it more, and we're talking Discraft, so is it easier, or is it more important, rather, is probably a better way of saying it, is it more important for Discraft to say, we want to try to get people to throw the buzz. We want the buzz to be in more people's bags, and we want that to be their go-to disc. Is that going to be easier to do by having, like, these limited edition buzz runs with players, to which, like, they have to maybe, I don't know, yeah. It's such a difficult question. It's one that probably, honestly, Trevor needs to probably get someone on to talk about. And I don't know if they would, right? Like, I don't know if they want to talk about their trade secrets or what they're trying to accomplish. But it is an interesting one, because you look at golf when we were trying to compare the two models of, like, okay, well, what is golf doing? Like, golf doesn't have branded golf balls. They don't really have branded gloves. They don't really have branded, and by branded, I mean, like, with players, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not super common of where every month or 2 months they have a new golf ball with a different logo from a player. I don't know. It's so interesting, and obviously it's, people love talking about it and speculating, but, like, I don't know how it works. I don't know how it's going to work down the road.
I wonder if part of it is because, like, golf companies, manufacturers, and people who are sponsoring golf players a lot of times have such large marketing budgets that they don't have to milk every dollar in their marketing budget for all it's worth. So they can afford to throw, let's just say, $200,000 at a player, and that player make them $50,000 because this other marketing thing they're doing, they put $1 million in, and that million is making them three. And so they can spread it wide, and they don't have to directly track each thing because they're like, well, by throwing this money wide, you know, if 1% of our marketing play pays for the other 98%, then all the marketing was good. Whereas
I mean, it's very similar. It's similar to how we handle marketing, right? Like, we're a pretty small business right now, and we want to make sure that when we pay for marketing or pay a player or whatever like that we are getting something in return for that. Now, obviously, there is this notion of, like, you don't necessarily, you know, when McDonald's has an ad show up, a commercial show up on during a football game, they're not tracking to see, like, okay, how many people went straight out and bought McDonald's right then. But there is this notion of, like, getting your name out there, getting your product out there, so that when that person is in a position to buy your product, they have that memory of, like, oh yeah, McDonald's, they have a new thing, let's go eat there. So there is that, but, like, for us, for example, like, being a smaller company, that's not very useful. Like, we're not trying, we don't, like, sure, we could be paying YouTubers all over the place, out the wazoo, like, big YouTubers, right? We can pay Dude Perfect a stupid amount of money to do something and shout Foundation out. Like, yes, that would get a lot of people to know about Foundation, but the money, like, we would need that money to come back.
Yeah.
At least break even.
You couldn't risk it.
No, we could not risk it. It could literally, paying for a sponsor video with Dude Perfect would cripple us. We would be crippled. So I could see that with some of the smaller manufacturers, and what you're saying makes sense of where, like, as the manufacturers get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're like, all right, our marketing budget this year, our sponsorship budget this year is not 20 million. It's now 200 million. They can sprinkle that around a little bit and take some risk here and there and know that they don't need to have one-to-one or in their case,
that's where
more
the
money
current model
back.
Comes from is, like, if I'm Discraft and I'm paying you, then I need to, I think the current models come from, we'll just use Discraft with you as an example of, like, I'm paying Brody X. So I need Brody products that have direct correlation to Brody to move and generate Y so that I know it was worth it. Whereas I think as companies get bigger, then that's where it makes sense of, like, yeah, we can pay X amount of pros, have all of them push our products, and just that's going to just generate revenue. And if, you know, Brody ends up pushing the Meteor like crazy and Corey Ellis ends up not having a good season, then that's fine because we're risking on both players and we're not having to rely on Tour Series just to track it. Whereas if I'm Mint Discs, yeah, I might want to put Silas Isaacson's name on the the Grackle or whatever disc to track to make sure Silas is making me my money that I'm paying because I have to track every dollar. Whereas now that manufacturers are getting bigger and throwing more money around, I think eventually that marketing ideology goes away and it's more so, you know, just spread it wide, get our name out there, and then that money will just kind of make itself. But if it doesn't, it's okay.
Yeah.
I think we're in this, like, weird in between shift.
And we've seen that too with companies with us, right? We have some companies that are like, we need to track to see how well you guys are doing so we can decide whether or not we want to continue to, you know, sponsor your videos or whatever. And then we've seen some companies that don't have any of that. And they just give you the money and you do the thing and they're good with it. And yeah, I think it's gonna be interesting to see what company does that, what manufacturing company does that first, makes that first jump to be like, you know what? We are not going to oversaturate with discs and, like, all these specialty discs and all this stuff. We are going to just focus on the discs that we currently sell, and we're going to give players X amount of dollars to throw our discs, and that's going to be it. Because you're right. Discraft has no way of knowing how many Meteors I've sold. They have no way of knowing how many Nuke SSs I've sold. They have no way of knowing how many new players that have never picked up a disc are throwing Discraft. They have no idea. It's very hard to track those numbers. Now, obviously, they can see, like, okay, we sold 10,000 Meteors last year. This year, we sold 100,000. But, like, is Discraft going to say, like, we're going to attribute that 90,000 growth to Brody? Like, no. So the Tour Series discs make a lot of sense on the manufacturing side to be able to say like who moves what. But again, at the end of the day, some of those discs just move because of the disc.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the name's on the disc. It just, it's just the disc.
We've talked about it. We talked about it before because I remember you were trying to come up with the word of like market cannibalization, I think was the word, the technical word for it, where eventually if you keep down this road, then like everyone that's within the market is just going to eat themselves to where like you're only going to be marketing to the same people. And then if the same people have the options of a Get Freaky zone, this zone with Ledgestone and Adam Hammes Tour zone, you know, this new zone, that new zone, this new zone, Corey Ellis zone. And out of nowhere, you have 15 zones to choose from, but you still didn't grow the zone thrower to where I'm still just the one zone thrower. Then now you're going to just hurt the sales of all of them versus if you were to grow the whole pool and maybe give the whole pool a lesser options where like, you know, there's this limited run, but then that limited run's actually limited and goes away. And there's this limited run and then there's just one zone. I think that model makes a lot more sense for all the companies as it grows, but it's definitely another one of those things where it's just like, it's going to be really interesting to see who makes the decision first, how the decision plays out for them. Is it something that like everyone starts echoing? And then like, is there this weird ripple effect where like a team brings back the Tour Series and then everyone like freaks out because now Tour Series is back? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that's just like disc golf's on the edge of, and it's like, who's going to be the first one to like take that leap? And then like, what's the market going to do in response to it?
Curious. It's very, very interesting. And obviously this time in the off season, that's always the big talk, right? Is the sponsorships, what's going to happen, how our company's going to move forward. And, you know, I think disc golf is in a spot right now where, you know, there are some manufacturers out there that can get really, really aggressive and can reap some of the benefits for being the first or the ones to be aggressive. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. All right. To wrap this out, I mean, we just saw the Rookie of the Year get announced. Isaac Robinson was announced as the NPO Rookie of the Year. We haven't seen FPO yet. Definitely the most deserving, in my opinion. The qualifications for Rookie of the Year got rewritten after Juliana Korver won last year because that was like a little bit weird. So now it's like, I think you can't play more than three Elite Series, National Tour, or Majors in a previous season. And so Isaac Robinson, when Trevor and I read it, we thought it was three or more, and he's played three events multiple times, but he hasn't played more. So he's right on the bubble, definitely the most deserving. I do think it'll be interesting, though, like, as the sport moves forward and evolves, that line of what a rookie is should become more and more clear because it should be harder and harder to play on tour. Whereas, like, the issue they run into now is, like, what if I, 3 years ago, went out and played four Pro Tour events just for fun in one season, took, you know, 5 years off just playing disc golf around here, and now I burst onto the scene and I'm Gannon Burr all of a sudden, and I pop off, win a major, and it's like, where did this kid come from? You know, and then it's like, oh, but he can't be rookie because X amount of years ago, he just kind of had some fun and played a few Pro Tour events that are close to him. Like, yeah. It's a weird line, but I think they've made the right decision to navigate it so far, and Isaac Robinson was definitely the right person to win that. I'll be curious to see kind of the other awards as they come out. We'll probably talk about those more in depth once we have like a full list of season awards, because like the All-Star has been announced. We're still looking for like other Rookie of the Year and stuff like that to
come out. Do you think anyone got snubbed from the All-Star?
Corey Ellis, I think, was the big snub, right?
I did want to look up. I think the easiest way to do this is maybe just like look up world rankings potentially and see like who fell.
People are also saying Chris Clemens got snubbed.
Clemens. All right,
I think
so
Kevin Jones got in with
family. I'm gonna go down the list and you tell me the people that did not make it because I don't know off the top of my head.
All right, I got Rick, it in front of me.
Ricky's on there, right? Eagle, Paul, Gannon, Calvin, Chris, they're all on there.
Yep.
Matty O's on there. Simon. Niklas, not on there.
Niklas is not.
Niklas currently is ninth in the world on UDisc.
Yeah, so that's a snub.
Isaac Robinson.
He is on there.
Kyle Klein.
He is on there.
Okay, Corey Ellis is 12th in the world.
Yeah, he's not.
Joel Freeman.
He is.
And then But now you have voting. I think even
this is the votings. Yeah.
Yeah. Who are the vote-ins?
So the people? Third card is Kyle Klein, Joel Freeman, James Conrad, Kevin Jones.
Kyle Klein.
That's the third
Joel
card.
Freeman. Okay.
So the second and third card were both voted, but the second card is Chris Dickerson, Matty O, Isaac Robinson, Simon.
So James, say the third card again.
James Conrad, Kevin Jones, Joel Freeman, Kyle Klein.
Okay, so Kyle Klein's 11th, Joel Freeman's 13th, makes sense. James Conrad is 17th, Kevin Jones is 18th.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that are in front of him that. But hey,
there
it's
are
an all-star
but,
event.
But,
I'm
but
fine
it's
with
also
the all-star event being like
it's,
that.
It's one of those of where it's like, should the 14th guy in the world get in instead of the 18th for the fan voting? Probably not. There's probably not that much difference in between those two, really. So just
I was gonna say, fan voting goes for. I mean, we've seen it with the NBA All-Star event and stuff. There's some players people want to see Kevin Jones in the All-Star event. People want to see James Conrad. So
brand
recognizability comes into play.
They're all very good. FPO side, everything was good there or what?
I don't remember there being any obvious snubs. Let me look really quick. This is third card.
Name the third card, I guess, and we'll just see.
I guess the one snub, Natalie Ryan's not. So third card's Ella Hansen, Sarah Hokum, Holland Hanley, Henna. Second card's
Sarah
Evelina
Hokum,
Missy.
Holland Hanley. I mean, all those people are very good. They're all up there.
Ella Hansen, Henna, Evelina, Missy, Val, Kat Mersch, that is. And then Kristen Page, Katrina Allen, Owen Scoggins. Yeah, there's no.
So Haley King and Natalie Ryan are the two that are in the top 10 that
both,
aren't there. But Haley didn't really play.
Yeah, but Haley didn't really play. She won a major, but didn't really play. Natalie Ryan played MVP.
But you also can say the same thing about Eagle.
Correct.
So Eagle got in, but they both won majors, right? Haley won a major.
Haley won a major. FPO, I think, is the snub's not as obvious. Because if you put Haley or Natalie and you're put them head to head against Holland, Sarah, Henna, Ella, that doesn't feel as obvious as a snub to me. So I think that's why there wasn't that much outrage, if you will, on FPO. But all right, I think that wraps up the show. Silas has to get to class.
I'll say one last thing.
Silly student.
One last thing. X-Nay the All-Star event, and let's do a champions event.
Oh, all the champions are there?
If you win on tour that year, you go to this super cool tournament.
Electric. We can call it the Champions Cup.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
Oh, you got your 2023 membership card. Nice. All right. Well, there you have it. We'll talk to you again same time, same place next week.